In early 1917, the original Dixieland Jazz Band made the first jazz recording. Over the next 100 years, we've heard transcendent leaps of creativity and staggering virtuosity. We have experienced the music of crushing pain, breathless romance, anger, exhilaration, and humor. This is that story. 100 years of jazz recordings. From WTJU Charlottesville, your host, Russell Perry. Woody Herman disbanded the Second Herd in 1949, and while Stan Kenton and Duke Ellington managed to keep a big band on the road through the 1950s, Count Basie disbanded his band at the start of the decade, but assembled a new one a few years later. Generally, this was a tough period for large ensembles. This, however, didn't dampen the urge for musicians and composers to hear music in large forms and to find ways to make it real. In this hour, we will survey the 1950s contributions of Stan Kenton and his orchestra, Count Basie and his New Testament band, Duke Ellington at Newport, Gil Evans' studio band, Quincy Jones, and the adventurous decktet of Teddy Charles. A major technological change occurred in 1948. Columbia introduced a long-playing record. Jazz benefited significantly, especially as its period as a hit-making popular genre had passed. No longer were jazz records primarily released as singles, but increasingly, whole collections of songs, or albums, were conceived and delivered. Going forward, much of the music we present should be seen as excerpts from collections, from LPs. In our look at big bands of the 1950s, let's turn first to Stan Kenton and his orchestra. Ted Gioia, in his History of Jazz, wrote, "True, there was a trademark Kenton sound, brassy, extroverted, pseudo-symphonic, and grandiloquent. But Kenton also delighted in undermining this very style by hiring writers and soloists with contrasting musical perspectives. Bill Russo's writing for the band, however, was firmly rooted in the Kenton tradition. His Halls of Brass pushed Kenton's horn obsession to an extreme in a virtuosic exercise that reportedly garnered begrudging admiration from symphony brass sections. From the LP Stan Kenton Presents from 1950, we'll hear Halls of Brass. That was Halls of Brass by Stan Kenton and his orchestra. Ben Ratliff, in his New York Times Essential Library of Jazz, wrote of the Kenton Orchestra, "No, Kenton's music doesn't sit comfortably amid the jazz tradition these days. It sounds like an artifact from a very hard-assed and rather pretentious planet. The second Basie big band really dominated the sound of American orchestral jazz. In the end, Americans will take jocularity, warmness, generosity, and shared cultural roots over Kenton's exercises in anxiety and holding the audience at bay." So this would be a good time to turn to Count Basie. Count Basie disbanded his big band in 1950. The band he formed 2 years later, known as the New Testament Band, was more an arranger's band than a freewheeling soloist's band. Ben Ratliff cites the Atomic Mr. Basie as good proof of why the Basie New Testament Band has become the most influential large group in jazz history. Ted Gioia wrote, "Although Basie stocked his bands of this period with outstanding young talent versed in the bebop idiom, the ethos of this latter-day unit shared many similarities with his various Kansas City and swing-era ensembles. Basie, old or new, would swing his band to perfection, achieving the comfortable sense of forward motion that jazz musicians describe as in the pocket. Basie's unsurpassed instinct for the right tempo was never more inspired than on his hit recording of Lil Darling. Rather than playing this piece at the medium tempo that composer Neil Hefti envisioned, Basie slowed it down to a pace only slightly faster than a ballad, but somehow maintaining the finger-snapping momentum of the groove tune. The result was magical." From the LP, The Atomic Mr. Basie, Lil Darlin' by Count Basie's Orchestra.
Thank you.
Darlin from Count Basie's orchestra will return with Duke Ellington at Newport in 1956 when Jazz at 100 continues in a moment. Welcome back to Jazz at 100 and the big bands of the 1950s. 1956 was the year of the great comeback for Duke Ellington at Newport. Ted Gioia wrote, "While other band leaders, Stan Kenton, Gil Evans, sought out exotic instruments to add color to their orchestrations, Ellington appeared content to remain within the confines of the traditional swing band. In this light, it comes as little surprise that the turning point for Ellington in the 1950s was spurred by his revival of a composition almost 20 years old, Diminuendo and Crescendo in Blue. Ellington's raucous performance of this piece at the 1956 Newport Jazz Festival electrified the audience. It was tenorist Paul Gonzalez's showboating 27-chorus solo, filled to the brim with blues cliches and occasional snatches of inspiration, that brought the crowd to its feet. Ellington's career now had a second wind. Only a few months before Newport, interest in his band had sunk so low that Duke had resorted to playing background music for the Aquacades, a water show staged outside New York City. Better bookings were now coming his way. Ellington's picture graced the cover of Time magazine. His band was again recording for a major label. And as you listen, see if you can hear Papa Joe Jones, Count Basie's drummer, who apparently was standing at the edge of the stage, pounding on the stage with a rolled-up newspaper. From July 7th of 1956, as recorded in the LP, Ellington at Newport, Diminuendo in Blue, and Crescendo in Blue.
And now we would like to play some of our 1938 vintage, Diminuendo in Blue and Crescendo in Blue. These are separated by an interval by Paul Gonzalez. Thank you. Anderson. Paul Gonzalez.
Diminuendo in Blue and Crescendo in Blue, the Duke Ellington Orchestra, from the LP, Ellington at Newport, 1956. Unlike Kenton, Basie, and Ellington, Gil Evans primarily assembled large ensembles around recording projects, such as his work through the 1950s with Miles Davis. His scope included several significant projects under his own name, like the LP's New Bottle, Old Wine in 1958, and Out of the Cool in 1960. Gary Giddens and Scott DeVoe in their work Jazz wrote, "Evans's reinventions of classic jazz pieces stimulated a revival of interest in jazz history. Like Monk and Mingus, Evans did not subscribe to the idea that modernism had trumped all that preceded it. In 1958, Evans adopted classic jazz themes for an album, New Bottle, Old Wine, featuring alto saxophonist Cannonball Adderley. The instrumentation is pure Evans, featuring 9 brasses, trumpets, trombones, bass trombone, French horn, tuba. Other than Adderley, he uses only 2 woodwind players and assigns them atypical jazz instruments, flute, piccolo, and bass clarinet. This is the old Jelly Roll Morton composition. As brought to life in the 30s by Benny Goodman, King Porter Stomp, from the LP New Bottle, Old Wine, Gil Evans Orchestra. King Porter Stomp from the Gil Evans Orchestra, in 1958. Jazz at 100 will return in a moment with Quincy Jones and his orchestra and the Teddy Charles Tentet. Welcome back to Jazz at 100 and the big bands of the 1950s. In 1956, Quincy Jones released an LP, This Is How I Feel About Jazz. In reviewing the LP for the Penguin Guide to Jazz, Brian Morton and Richard Cook write, "These are classic cuts. They leap out of the speakers with a freshness and alertness that banish the intervening years. Who couldn't stir to the brasses perfectly weighted on Stockholm Sweetenin'? Perhaps the quintessential Quincy track, or the gospely edge of Sermonette." These charts were by Jimmy Giuffre, Lenny Niehaus, and Herb Geller, top-of-the-range work from the hottest talents of the moment. Here's Stockholm Sweetenin' from Quincy Jones and his orchestra, an all-star band that included, among others, Art Farmer on trumpet, Jerome Richardson on flute and tenor sax, Phil Woods on alto sax, Paul Chambers on bass, Hank Jones on piano, and many others. Thank you. Quincy Jones and his orchestra, Stockholm Sweetnin', from This Is How I Feel About Jazz. Vibraphonist Teddy Charles, a composer and arranger of note, chose a large ensemble of 10 players as a vehicle for expression in the 1950s. Smaller than a big band, the larger number of voices than the typical quintet or sextet of the era allowed for complex and rich arrangements. Morton and Cook wrote, "Teddy Charles is usually respected as a harbinger of Ornette Coleman's free music. His early records aim for an independence of bebop structure, which still sounds remarkably fresh. It's full of pungent music from various hands. The record is a showcase for some of the sharpest arranging minds of the day, Jeffrey, Brookmeyer, Waldron, Evans, and especially George Russell." Charles's own The Emperor and a transfigured Nature Boy stand as tall as the rest. It all swings too hard to be dismissed as long hair music, but it was certainly out of the ordinary during the hard bop cool era. Here's Nature Boy, followed by Lydian M1, a George Russell composition, from the Teddy Charles Tentet. Thank you. Nature Boy and Lydian M1 from the LP, the Teddy Charles Tentet. And we've been listening to great music from big bands of the 1950s. Gary Giddens wrote, "The radical who doesn't continue to fan the flames of revolt will soon be consigned to the limbo of living legend." This was the potential fate of the bebop pioneers during the 1950s, yet the prescient Coleman Hawkins and the pioneers Charlie Parker, Dizzy Gillespie, Bud Powell, and Max Roach all contributed compelling music during that decade. We'll listen to that music in the next hour of Jazz at 100. You have been listening to Jazz at 100, a celebration of 100 years of jazz recordings produced by WTJU Charlottesville and made possible in part through a grant from the Virginia Endowment for the Humanities. For annotated playlists and additional resources, go to wtju.net/jazz100. There you can also stream any of the programs in the series that you may have missed. This is your host, Russell Perry. Thanks for joining us.